Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Lock Haven, Pennsylvania, and earned a BS in education from Lock Haven University. She then embarked on a career in fashion. In 1981, one Oscar De La Renta outfit and a concept car changed her life and transformed the use of models in auto shows throughout the world. The author of The Sirens of Chrome, The Enduring Allure of Auto Show Models, her name? Marjorie Krebsky-Dossi. And we're honored to have her as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Marjorie Krebsky-Dossi, the founder and CEO of Productions Plus, The Talent Chef. Marjorie, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Well, it's such an honor to be here. Thank you for asking me.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Yes, indeed. How nice of you to ask, because they were both very phenomenal people. I was brought up in central Pennsylvania, as you mentioned, Lock Haven, Pennsylvania, a very small town. To give you an idea where it's located, it's about a 40-minute drive from State College, Pennsylvania, home of the Nittany Lions. So my dad was a country physician. My mother was a homemaker, and I was the oldest of five children. And it was a very classic growing up in a rural area. My dad, as a general practitioner, was a surgeon, delivered babies, had office hours. He was a member of the Kiwanis Club, a member of the school board, the president of the Lutheran Church. So he was a very active person, but he was also a very good family man. He had office hours, medical office hours, every single day from 1 until 5. At 5 o'clock, he would come home because it was important to have a family dinner. And then he would go back to the office and work until 10 at night. He took Wednesday off and Friday off, but the rest of the week he had those office hours. So I grew up thinking that that's how everyone worked. You worked all day, you came home to dinner, and then you went back to the office. And around the dinner table, a lot happened. Five children, and I can remember my father saying to me as we were growing up, we had assignments for conversations during those family dinners. There was always to be harmony at the dinner table, but we were to read Newsweek. You remember Newsweek magazine? And in the days in which I was growing up, it was a very glossy magazine, and everyone read it. He wanted us to be up to date on current events, and we talked about it. And we developed a lot of great skills at that table, the art of debate, if we didn't agree with each other, but doing it in a very, I will say, conversational way, not offending anyone, but expressing your opinion as articulately as you could. And there were five children, so there was a 10-year age span there, and all of us developed some pretty good skills.
Marjorie, where'd you get your love and passion for fashion?
I believe I got it from my grandmother. My grandmother was from Philadelphia, and she always loved fashion. She was someone who would attend fashion shows. She and her husband, my grandfather, would go to Paris once a year before the war. Lucky people. And she would go to the couture houses, and then she would come home and copy what she saw. So she was very much into fashion. Also, I believe I got my sense of fashion from my father. He was always immaculately dressed. He always believed that you dress for your profession and the respect of it. You dress up because you begin the day with a great anticipation. This will be a great day. You're not in your pajamas. You're not in your sweats. You dress up the best you can. And I carry that out as much as I can and instill in my employees and the people that I'm around that that's a very good thing to do.
You got a BS in education from Lock Haven University. Then you went to work at Hudson's as their manager of the Fashion Bureau.
Well, there are a few years in between that. I taught school for 2 years after I got my Bachelor of Science in Education, and I realized it wasn't for me. And what I learned from that is teaching is one of the hardest and most dedicated jobs you can have. But the one-room classroom was not for me. So I went to New York. I went to a school in New York called Toby Colburn, which is now part of the Fashion Institute of Technology. And then I went to work for Glamour magazine in New York. And from there, I came to Detroit to become manager of the Fashion Bureau at the J.L. Hudson Company. And that was amazing. I was not familiar with the Midwest at that time, but it was really exciting to move to Detroit. And the people who were working at Hudson's were very connected, literally internationally, in fashion, not only in women's merchandising, men's merchandising, but the home store was amazing. So I came to Hudson's at really what I call their glory age. The director of fashion was a woman named Madeline Coe, who was very inspirational to me. And she was respected just everywhere. So that began my experience here in Detroit. I was there for a while, and then I started to think about, I would like to do something on my own. And as manager of the Fashion Bureau, I was in charge of booking all of the fashion shows for Hudson's. And so I knew all of the models in town. And there was a model who said to me, Marjorie, have you ever been to an auto show? And I said, no, I have never been to an auto show. And she said, well, I am working for Cadillac. I'm standing beside their concept car. I have this amazing Oscar de la Renta dress, which you have to come and see. And I said, I will come and see you.
When we come back, we'll find out how that dress and that concept car changed Marjorie's life and changed an industry. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Marjorie Krefsky-Dozy, the author of The Sirens of Chrome, The Enduring Allure of Auto Show Models. Marjorie, 1981?
1981.
You go to this auto show?
It was amazing.
This model that you knew?
Right.
She's wearing an Oscar de la Renta outfit, standing by a concept car?
Yes, I went to see the I went to see the outfit. But I fell in love with the car. The car was a piece of sculpture. It was a piece of art. It was enticing. And I said to her, oh, the dress is amazing, but can you tell me about the car? And she said, Marjorie, I cannot talk about the car. I'm just allowed to stand here. I can't say anything about it. But I was here at the press conference this morning. The designer spoke about it. He left his notes in the glove compartment. I have a break in 20 minutes. Let's talk. I'll bring the notes. And I have some hot gossip, too. So it's going to be a great little talk. That gave me the idea after I talked to her. Here was a absolutely beautiful woman, no question about it. But she was very well educated, and she was very articulate. In fact, she was an actress. She was a communications major and a theater major from the University of Michigan. And the idea came to me, could it not work really well on the auto show floor to give a much better experience to the public if people knew the product really well, and they could talk about it, and they could entice people to look further into that brand or into this specific vehicle. That was my concept for the future. So I wrote up a business plan. I did not know anyone in the automotive business. I did know people in retailing, but not automotive. And I began taking this business plan around. It took 2 years to interest someone in it after lots of phone calls, lots of doors being slammed in my face, literally. And I was, at the time, remember, this was the 80s, there were very few women involved in management positions or even in supplier positions like myself. And finally, there were two companies at about the same time like the idea. One was Pontiac Motors. The name of the gentleman who believed in it was Al Fisher. And the other was the Nissan Motor Company, which was located at that time in Torrance, California. So I began, and began with training of the auto show models, which we called product specialists, because now they could talk about cars. And the first season out, it became very successful. People loved talking to other people about the cars, but the product specialists could not sell a car, so they were not threatening. It was all information. What do you need to know? What do you want from a vehicle? So it was a very broad but good focus on the consumer.
Marjorie, 1910 was the first time that women were used as models in the auto show.
Correct.
So for 70-plus years, they were like Vanna White.
They were.
They never said anything.
They never said anything.
And then you got this concept, and you start going to Henry the Deuce, Phil Benton, these iconic leaders, and say, we have to have these models talk. You must have got rejected after rejected. How did you overcome that rejection?
Well, rejection never bothered me because I believed in this idea. I knew eventually it would take root. And sometimes people have to hear things several times before it does take root. And having been an educator, I had several courses in psychology, so I knew that new ideas were not always hopped on right away. And especially in business where you have to sell it to a group of people or a board. So I kept talking about it and talking about it. And I'm sure some people were very tired of me talking about it. But the day did come. And rejection is part of business. I've been rejected more times than I've had successes, and I've been in business for over 30 years. So it's part of the process, but you have to believe in yourself and what you do.
30-plus years later, tell us about Productions Plus, the talent shop.
Yes, we're located here in the Detroit area in Bingham Farms. We also have an office in New York, Atlanta, and in Los Angeles, and we'll be opening an office in Dallas this spring. So we pretty much cover the United States, and we also do a significant amount globally. We've done the Lexus Dealer Show, the Toyota Global Show. We're always at the Paris Auto Show, the Geneva Auto Show, and the Stuttgart Auto Show. So we have a global reach, and I have about 83 people in the entire company, and they are all very committed to what I call engagement marketing. And engagement marketing is one-on-one speaking with consumers about products. And as great as technology is, and as beautiful as the cars are on the auto show floor or any product, the one thing it doesn't have is it cannot talk to specific questions that people have. So someone must tell you how beautiful it is, how wonderful it is, who designed it, why they designed it, what the brand identity is behind it, and then talk about technology. That's a whole new concept. People want to know, how do you hook up your phone to your car? I remember when that first came out. I had to go to the dealership to even find out, and I had to teach
it. I still do.
Well, there's honesty for you, Jack.
Old school.
Well, there are a lot of people, and the technology will only increase, and the technology will only become more significant in cars. So the role of the product specialist to explain it is very important.
You represent 21 of the 25 OEMs.
That's correct.
You'll employ 4,000 to 5,000 people this year.
Correct.
You'll do 71 auto shows, you and your team, this year. What's the job requirements for a product specialist?
They're very simple. Good communication skills and empathy with people. And most people are or can be attractive. And looking the very best that you can, but very real, is important. But mainly it's communication skills, just delving into people. What do you want to know? How can I help you? How can I truly be of assistance in making a decision about the cars? The product specialists go through a lot of training. And the training lasts usually It's usually in August or September before the auto show season kicks off. It includes several days of classroom work and a significant ride and drive, driving the cars that you're going to represent, but also the competitor cars.
Then they have to train to stand in those heels for 8 to 10 hours.
Well, let us get down to wardrobe. Wardrobe is a very significant part of the auto show because each brand has its own visual identity. Just like you can look at a Mercedes, you know what that looks like. You look at a Chrysler or Ford, you get a vibe for that. The same with a Chevrolet. But how a consumer identifies you through the wardrobe is very important to us. We spend a lot of time on that.
These product specialists, it can be a career. You've had some models doing this for 30 years.
Yes, we've had. I have had some people that have been with me since day one when we started this off. And it used to be the auto shows ran from September until May. They still do. That's a significant calendar. But there are many auto show events during the summer. Most of the OEMs identify or have some kind of contract with a sports venue, like a summer volleyball league or even a little league baseball. And they have displays there, and they need product specialist there. So a product specialist can work all year round if they desire.
If you want to learn more, www.productions-plus.com. Productions-plus.com. We're talking to Marjorie Krefski-Dosi. When we come back, we'll ask her what the 10 best models or product specialists have in common.
Okay.
And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasul. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Marjorie Krefski-Dosi, who went to her first auto show in 1981. And that experience transformed an industry. Marjorie, what do the 10 best models / product specialists have in common?
They have a positive attitude. It's very simple. One component. They're very positive about what they do. Of course, it doesn't hurt to have some communication skills, and it doesn't hurt to have a lot of knowledge, but a positive attitude, I feel, just overcomes many, many things. I have had some people that have auditioned for the position and did not get it or get chosen the first year, but came back the second year or the third year and then got hired. It's because they really wanted it. In their gut, this was something that was important to them.
You get models from all over America.
Yes, we do.
And so the show actually started a week ago for press preview. Then we had Friday night, gala.
Yes, we did.
And it opened, and it's going to run for another week. So do they wear the same outfit for 15 straight days?
That's a great question. No, they don't, but it may look very similar. In the wardrobe, each of them gets several different pieces or several different dresses or several different jackets, so they do not wear the same thing every single day. But it looks very identifiable with the exhibit because the wardrobe must match the exhibit. Now, regarding shoes, they might choose to wear the same ones because they are more comfortable, but they also get several pairs of shoes.
Years ago, these OEMs would say, we want so many blondes and so many redheads. Mm-hmm. Now they say, we need people who can speak in these 11 languages.
Having diversity talent is critical for every single manufacturer we work with. Because if you look at the demographics of America and you look at each auto show, they're different and everyone wants to come to the auto show. And languages are very important. Having talent that are bilingual or even trilingual, every single group of them, we have a core who have that ability.
We have the auto show.
Yes, we do.
We have Auto Hall of Fame. If someday a Hall of Fame gets created for models, which man and which woman would be in its inaugural class?
I would not identify a specific man or woman because they need to be eclipsed by the brand. The cars are the stars and the brands are the stars. So you would say, what is the perfect Cadillac woman for right now? She would not have a name, but she would be a composite of, she would be part diversity, part Northern America, part Southern America, part Southwest America, and you find a face and a person to represent that. So there is not one person, because the auto shows there's 71 of them. So they're a conglomerate of different people and different personalities. And in each area of the country, you staff that show based on what the demographics of that consumer's going to be. Example, in the Southwest, there are many shows where Spanish is a predominant language. Even you're from Chicago. We make sure that the diversity that's relevant in Chicago is represented on the floor.
The South Side versus the South. All right. While you were giving that answer, Tim Allen's
yes.
agent tweeted and said, Marjorie, Timmy Allen would be in that inaugural class. He was a model.
Yes, yes, he was. Tim Allen did work the auto shows, and I remember he came back to Detroit one time, and I went up and I reintroduced myself to him, and he said those were some of the best times he ever had. And I sent him my book, Sirens of Chrome, and he even sent back a message that he enjoyed it, and he was a spokesperson for Cadillac for several years.
Forget about auto show models. Who's been the most amazing model in the world in the past 30 years?
In the past 30 years, I would say Gene Shrimpton, American model. And we talked formally, Italian would be Cappuccini. And the reason I say these two women is because they exuded a very classic model, a very glamorous model. Now, when you look at the cover of Vogue or Elle, you will see someone that is not just a model, but you may see a movie star or someone who represents some kind of component of our society. So beauty on the front of magazines and models is changing also. So you can't be just always a model. You need to represent something else in society. Could be politics, it could be being a pop star, could be a singer, could be a movie star, could be a writer. And this year, on the cover of Vogue magazines, we've seen many people like that.
For 26 years, I was blessed to lead and help build an IT services firm,
yes.
Decision Consultants. And early on, I decided we were going to have female sales reps.
What an idea.
And they did fabulous, because we needed people with steel and velvet.
Well
hard
said.
Hard charging, high energy, but then they had a werewolf. Why are women so successful so often as salespeople?
Well, psychology says they are trained and brought up to have more empathy. So they listen a little more carefully, or they question, or they exude feelings that maybe not every male salesperson does. And although I have known some very good male salespeople too, but I see where you're coming from. Women are very good at sales because they've been selling all their life. You know, when you raise children, you got to sell, you got to eat your cereal, you have to try this new food. They're selling all their life. So it's a natural extension.
When we had breakfast a few weeks ago, I quote you now, Jack, women have to be obsessed with the client and their needs rather than be obsessed with the competition or themselves.
Yes, and that's not just a statement about women. That's a statement about my company. And when we look at our clients. We become very obsessed with who they are, what they want, where their future is. We learn everything about them. I think it is very important to become obsessed with that. So you begin thinking like them. You come to the board table, and because you are thinking their way, you can tune in to what they want you to do. Because we work in a very esoteric environment, a creative marketing environment. Sometimes there are no rights or wrongs, but you begin to funnel your thoughts to come up with creative ideas to mirror those or to follow their goals. So instead of being obsessed by, oh, what's the competition doing? Become obsessed with, what is your client doing? What is your client thinking? What does your client want? Where is their future? Where do they want to go? How can you make them look good? And sometimes we do strategy sessions about these things, and we fill a boardroom with pictures and thoughts and ideas so that we can begin to think like they do.
We're talking to Marjorie Krefsky-Dosey, who for 35 years has rubbed shoulders with all the icons in the auto industry. When we come back, we're going to ask her about a few of those icons.
Well, okay.
And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasul. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Marjorie Krefsky-Dosey, the founder and CEO of Productions Plus, the talent shop, the leading supplier of auto show product specialist in America, in the world. Okay, you've rubbed shoulders with icons in the auto industry for 30 years. Harley Earls.
Well, there's an icon for you, and it's more, not so much rubbing shoulders, but it's more a great admiration for the work that he did at General Motors and the design concepts that are still being fulfilled. And there's another reason I admire him very much, and that is because on his design team, he had a core of women designers. And you really have to do some research, like at the Skillman Library, to find out about this core of women who were really responsible for the interior designs of most of the cars in the late 40s and the 50s and the 60s. And this team was responsible for some of the pastel cars that came out, the pink cars, the lime green cars that you see in museums now. And you think, yes, these were focused toward the American woman. So that's why I admire him.
A man from central Pennsylvania, like yourself, Lee Iacocca.
Yes, he certainly is an icon from the past, but what he did with the industry is with us in the present. Yes, he was from Pennsylvania, and my late husband was on the same baseball team as he was many years ago. So I remember the first time I met him, I went up and I said to him, you know, I am from central Pennsylvania. And I told him the town, and he said, very few people know about that. I said, I know, you're from the big city. You're from Allentown, Pennsylvania. And they had that great department store, Hess Brothers. So that was our conversation. It wasn't necessarily about automotive, but it was about roots and family and things that were really important to him. And I admire him because I believe he was certainly an icon of the automotive industry, but also a family man.
He came out with the Mustang for Ford, and then
he was
helped
brilliant.
Save Chrysler.
He helped save Chrysler, and he put it on the map.
And then he and Peter Max raised the money for us to renovate the Statue of Liberty.
That's right. That's
right. All right. Carlos Ghosn.
Well, he would be our current rock star. And he was at Press Week for the auto show this week. And he is very important to me because I think he saved Nissan Motor Corporation several years ago. Brilliant, insightful, targeted man. He knows what he wants. He goes after the things that he wants, and he makes it happen. You have to respect him for what he has done within the industry. Also, he's a global player. The other people that we talked about are very, very much American. This gentleman, Carlos Ghosn, is comfortable in any country, almost any language, and almost at any professional or social situation. So he is still a contender, and we haven't finished with what his accomplishments are yet.
Speaking of having finished, one more.
Yes?
Mary Barra.
Well, she's the breakthrough of the glass ceiling. To have Mary Barra in place, to have her on the cover of magazines, and to have her showcased, she came into that position in a very difficult time. She was put in front of the congressional committee. She answered questions. She did it with grace and to the best of her abilities. And one wonders, did she know that was going to be in her future? She had worked very hard for that position, and she had attained great success. So she also is someone like Carlos Ghosn, who are the power structures for the future. So it will be interesting now that General Motors has gone through the recovery. They have some amazing new products. Their industry or their company is reaching out. We will see what else she does. So it's like her story is not finished. It is really just begun.
Auto show started yesterday, runs for another week, and the previous week, we had the press preview week.
Right.
What's new? What did you learn, Marjorie?
Well, the press previews were very exciting this year. It isn't so much that all the new things are in the exhibits. You've gone to auto shows before where they're the lights and they're the two-story buildings inside Cobo Hall that represent each brand. Now, there is a real focus on technology. The automotive industry is looking at autonomous cars, cars that can do things that they've never done before. Now, a couple years ago, we were all amazed and surprised when they came out with a car that could park itself. Now we're talking about self-driving cars, self-driving buses, self-driving commercial vehicles. And they say on the auto show floor, by 2019, we will have some of those products to look at. Now, you know, when the self-parking car came out, it was an extra that you can add. So my forecast would be, like in 2019, we will see these as additions. They will not be inexpensive, but over the next 5 to 10 years, they will become much more commonplace, and it will change our industry. I attended the Ford Motor Company press conference with Bill Ford, and he showed visually how he thinks driving on highways will change from everyone having their own car, although the single car will never go away, to mass transportation that looks different. And he began to talk about how the Lyft and Uber cars have transformed some kind of transportation. And it will be, you can call up a car and it will take you anywhere, maybe to work, maybe you'll share it. And instead of walking out the door and in 1 or 2 seconds hopping in your car, you might have to wait 2 minutes for a car, but it will be on its way. So that kind of technology was very exciting.
We'd be remiss, Marjorie Kresky-Dosti, if we didn't talk about the Friday Night Gala. You call it the Detroit Prom.
I do. It's the Detroit Prom, and we get dressed up for that. We love it. Here in Detroit, there is not another party where throngs of people from all over Detroit come out. You will see the mayor of Detroit. You will see the governor. You will see politicians. You will see the OEMs and the people that run automotive companies and management. And you will see our product specialist. And you will see lots of 4 and 5 inch glamour heels and glamour dresses. It's a fashion show, and it's a lot of fun. It's meet and greet.
And also, since 1976, it's raised $106 million for about 10 or 12 different charities in town. This past year, I think it was $5.5 million.
Isn't that wonderful?
Fabulous.
It's glamour. Everybody win-wins.
The people you deal with every day now, the product specialist and the OEM reps, they're millennials. Talk to us about millennials.
Well, I think millennials sometimes get a bad rap because they can be very hardworking. And they were brought up at a time when they saw that there might not be job security. They saw their parents being laid off. They saw that there was some resistance to hiring women. So this was in their background. So when they take a job, they become committed, but they do look around at other opportunities, and they do appreciate a job very much. I found in my company, the millennials can be very focused, and you do have to run a different company. We do things there that are fun. There's a lot of laughter in the office. There's a lot of joking. We do some very serious stuff, and there's always food around. Millennials love food. And it's more fun. I think that is what equals having a lot of millennials around.
You've had a lot of great honors. One of them, 2015, Northwood University named you as one of its Distinguished Women of the Year.
That was great, a great honor.
With Brenda Raleigh, Jennifer Filippi, Donna Yost, Faye Nelson, Candace Miller, yourself, Margaret Cooney Casey, Stephanie Curtis. What do all these great women have in common?
Well, I think we all have a sense of pride in what we do, and we have a sense of we want to do something in life that is important, and we have selected different areas in which to do it. In the cast of women you just mentioned, you have attorneys, you have business people, you have politicians. The one thing we have in common is we chose something, we focused on it, and we made it happen.
Young women today, or young men, who want to gain self-confidence, true inner confidence. Marjorie, how do they do it?
Well, you have to be patient with yourself because you are a process. And in that process, you need to figure out, where do I want to go? Have patience with yourself and never take your eye off that ball. Just keep going.
As our time winds down together this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
And that is, believe in yourself. Look yourself in the mirror, believe in yourself, say to yourself, I am good, I am worthy, I can do whatever I want with this wonderful life of mine.
Do you ever pinch yourself and say, that one dress and that one concept car changed an industry?
It did, and it changed my life too. And all, I think, for the better. And I believed in it. I believed in myself. And I believed in the auto show and the power of it nationally and globally.
You've led a fantastic, fascinating life. You're still young. You're still energetic. You got a lot more shows in you.
Yes, indeed.
Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spawn.